times it's becoming farcical. You have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form. This is not a Lions tour as we know
it. For the best Lions coverage this summer, subscribe to the OTB Rugby podcast stream on the OTB Sports app.
Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you. We are on air until 8 o'clock. You can text us on 53106. Clare 114, Wexford 15 at Semple Stadium in their hurling qualifier. Clare with a clear advantage. This is the Saturday panel. So we're streaming the conversation as well. You can listen on News Talk, but also watch us on the Off the Ball social channels for Periscope on Twitter at Off the Ball, on YouTube, on Facebook. We're also streaming on the OTB Sports app. So search OTB Sports in your app store to download it if you haven't already. So the first test between the British and Irish Lions and South Africa is next Saturday in Cape Town. We've got live commentary of every game, every test here on Off the Ball. Remember the 2021 British and Irish Lions tour on OTB Sports, brought to you with Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions. What's it like to play in this great series? Over the next hour, to find out, we're going to join two Irish legends, the former prop Nick Popplewell and second row Mick Galway. Lads, good to chat to you again. How are you getting on?
Very good.
Doing good. Doing good. All is well.
Great stuff, lads. Just in terms of selection, when you got the call for the Lions back in 1993, a long time ago, Nick, how did it work back then? Was it a letter? We saw this big announcement with all the players being named out by Warren Gatland's selection there a few weeks ago. What was it like for you?
I can't remember how. Golov, one question to me. Don't interrupt.
Go on, Nick.
Oh, sorry, I was only being smart to Nick.
Is it Nick and Mick? We won't get mixed up with that.
Yeah, well, just... I think all along, I don't know about Mick, he was probably a shoe-in to get picked, but all along, I remember Ken Reid was our representative, and all season he was saying, lad, you're playing crap, you haven't a hope, so listen, just enjoy yourselves, book your holidays, there's no one in Ireland going to be going on this tour, so, you know... We beat England then on that Saturday, Mick, wasn't it? We beat England, I think, in Lansdowne Road. And then all of a sudden, I mean, the voices came around saying, Jesus, you know, if Ireland can beat England and beat them fairly well, you know, they're going to put somebody on it. So I think Mick and I were probably the easiest ones to shoe in because we could probably cover a couple of positions. But I can't remember getting any... We might have got a letter afterwards, but we would have, I'm sure... Ken Reid would have rang us first, did they, Mick? I don't know.
No, I'll tell you what happened. From my point of view, and funny enough, I think I wasn't picked for the first game of the championship, which was against Scotland in 93. And then was everybody got the letters to see if they were available. And because I was on the squad for the start of the Six Nations match, I never got that letter. But anyway, I remember we lost to Scotland, but then we had a good game against France and we beat Wales away. And then obviously England at home, and England were going for a championship, you know what I mean? They had all, it was all the great English side, and it was a case of turning up, but there was no pressure on us. And I suppose, to be honest, like you said, Poppy, like the Lions was the furthest thing from my mind. Like I was trying to get back onto the Irish team because I'd been left out at the start of the season. So, and funny enough, and Poppy, you would never have made this squad, but I was involved in the squad preparing. We beat England on the Saturday, and on the Monday, we were flying out to Hong Kong for the Hong Kong Sevens, right? Now, people that know me mightn't think I'm much of a Sevens player, but I was involved with the Irish squad at the time. And we were in Dublin, and I remember it was Noel Murphy that came in. Noel Murphy comes in and says, because who else was there? Would it be the likes of Vinnie Cunningham?
Simon Gagan was the one, wasn't it?
As well. And you know what I mean? And the likes of Eric Elwood, who stormed onto the Six Nations that year. And he came in and says, I'm afraid we've good news and bad news. We've only two in the Lions squad. And straight away, you know, I never thought I'd be the one. Poppy, you were always pretty much favoured to go. But like when I heard it, so my preparation for the Lions squad was to head off to Hong Kong for 10 days, and I think I played 3 minutes of a match out there, and the rest was having the crack, as you do, because we just beaten England and heading out to Hong Kong straight after. So it was amazing. But look, it was, as you said, there was no big Raz and Taz have announced in the squad. But the disappointing thing, I suppose, from an Irish point of view, is there were 17 English picked, and there was two Irish. You know, and like, considering we gave him a good hiding the previous Saturday, but then again, that's the Lions squads haven't picked on that, obviously. But it was disappointing. But I really felt sorry for the likes of Simon Gagan, you know, Eric Elwood, all these lads, you know, even the Claw, like, you know, was close enough on it. So, you know, it was disappointing, but at the same time, personally, I was delighted for myself. And I suppose that's the same with you, Poppy. You know what I mean? It was just great to get the nod.
Yeah, Nick, you've been down there the previous year. Were you down there, Mick, as well? Or were you on the New Zealand tour?
Yeah, we were there.
Yeah, so you knew what to expect.
Yeah, we were there the previous year.
Yeah.
So that was tough. That was a tough tour. And it definitely stood to us, I suppose, Poppy, because, you know, touring New Zealand is probably the toughest place we'll ever tour. Touring 2 years in a row would certainly would have stood to us. And I suppose maybe, even though we should have won the first test down there with Ireland, we got a few hidings there as well, and particularly in the last test, they just hammered us. Like, you know what I mean, it was a hard tour, but again, it was a great learning curve, and it certainly started us going back there the following year.
Definitely, I think that was a big advantage, because like everything else, we had just been there. New Zealand is a miserable bloody place to tour at the best of times, and you know, we actually had some good games out there, Mick, even though we got hammered all together. You know. My sound is good. Back again.
And it was amateur, probably the last great amateur tour, this 1993 Lions tour, wasn't it, Nick?
Yeah,
certainly,
in fairness, it was a tour, wasn't it? I mean, I don't know. We certainly did enjoy it. The games were hard. You had your night then enjoying yourself, and maybe the following day a little enjoying yourself, and then you were kind of got stuck in then for the match in 5 days' time. But no, it was certainly, actually, it was a massive experience. I mean, it's with us, it's the Olympics, really, isn't it, Mick? Because you can't get any higher than that, you know?
Well, absolutely, because, you know, and it was, as you said, it was the last real amateur tour. Like, there was 13 games on it, you know what I mean? And you know, I know. We flew from the North Island to the South Island, but we buzzed around everywhere, like, and we went to places that you'd never see in your life, or you never can go back. And I suppose more importantly, I remember going to places like Hawke's Bay, who had the Lions hadn't been there in about 60 years or something. You know what I mean? So for what it meant to them, and going to little villages, and when I say, well, little towns, I should say, but places like that, it was huge because of what I know it's been well documented, but look, particularly for say people in New Zealand and Australia and South Africa as well, the Lions only come around once every 12 years. You know what I mean? And when they do, it's unique in its own right. But particularly, I suppose, that tour of New Zealand, we had 13 matches and in 13 different places. Like, so it's just,
but
from
the
that
other
point
end
of view, you can't see the world.
You were certainly pulled apart though, weren't you? I mean, you had more meet and greets, and you were maybe a couple of days before a match, you were going to a town hall and you were having lunch there and you were, you know, fantastic. You were meeting lovely people, but Christ, you were on your feet for maybe 3 or 4 hours, which certainly wasn't great for kind of preparation for a match, was it?
No, I think they did that tactically. Everywhere we went, we got there was a different Maori chief and everywhere we went, so we got the...
There was loads of Maori chiefs, actually, wasn't there? I think they used to... And they were women, men, every bloody shape and size, weren't they?
Absolutely, and they did their version of the haka or their... They all have their different versions of the haka and each of the Maori regions, so we all had to go through that. But at the same time, it was a great experience. There's no doubt about that.
So very welcoming, obviously, Mick Galway. Were you a dirt tracker? Is that fair to say?
I was a dirt tracker. Yeah, like as I said, I was lucky enough to get to be on the spot. I felt, and I was picked as a back row, and you know, I played a bit of back row, but I wouldn't consider myself, like, I played a bit of number 8 and wing forward, but I was picked on a line spot in a back row. And, like, the other back rows were Winterbottom, Mike Teague, Dean Richards, you know what I mean? Ben Clark, who was probably one of the stars of that Lions tour, and I think the other one was Richard Webster from Wales, who I haven't heard from since. But, like, you know what I mean? It was always going to be very competitive for me to get into the test side. I enjoyed it, but I was I always felt I'd love to have got a crack in the second row because I played all my good rugby in the second row, and that's what got me onto the squad. I the squad in the first place, but I was out there as a back row. Look, I wasn't complaining, but yes, I was the dirt tracker. And in fact, and it was very funny because do you remember Poppy? The second test, oh yeah, lost the first test, and the second test, all the English forwards came in, like including yourself. Like there was Poppy and seven other English forwards, but there was three Scots lads dropped, you know, and the Scots lads kind of threw the ties out of the pram per se, because you know what I mean, they just weren't happy. And there was a, I won't say there was a split in the camp, because, well, there was, because the Scottish lads were well pissed off. There was three Scottish forwards dropped, the three English lads brought in, and that kind of and obviously won the second test and was probably unlucky not to win the third, but it kind of created a split. So I was with those dirt trackers, but I had no, yeah, I'm not right. I was just happy to be there, to be honest.
You're touching on a very kind of a major point there, because if the Wednesday side isn't doing well, the tour doesn't work. And you're quite right.
Absolutely, yeah.
There was Wrighty, Burnell, and Kenny Milne then, but Kenny would have still been on the subs, wouldn't he?
Kevin would be still on the subs, you see, yeah. And but then, like, remember you had the two, Andy Reid and Damien Cronin, the two second rows as well, you know what I mean?
Oh, sugar, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, like, I remember playing, before the last test, we played Waikato, which was probably the strongest province there, like, Gatlin was playing, along with John Mitchell. There was a fellow playing by the name of Dwayne Monkley, he was an unbelievable player. Reece Ellison was playing that. Reece Ellison, who played centre for Munster after, you know what I mean? But they had a phenomenal team, but they absolutely hammered us. And playing that match, I remember, like, it was disappointing, because you know something, fellas, like there was fellas on that team that had already thrown in the towel and they were going home, and signs on Waikato put about 50 points to us, and that was disappointing, to be honest. But you know, I remember playing
But if the Wednesday side isn't doing well either, you know, on the pitch, the moment, you know, the whole thing loses momentum, doesn't it? I mean, it does create an atmosphere.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So therefore, what Warren Gatland's been doing the last few weeks, giving everybody a chance, it seems to have progressed a bit from there, where you don't have these two separate camps, Nick, Popplewell, that it is much more blended. And then by the time you get to the tests, you know what your team is.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. But it does, certainly in our day, it became very evident very quickly who was going to be on the Wednesday side, Golov, didn't it? And who was going to be on the Saturday side? Now, I know, I think Will Carney, wasn't any of the Scots. Did Will Carney, when did Will get dropped?
Will was dropped. And I think Will probably thought he should have been captain in the first place of the squad. And then he went out and he didn't make the test side. You know what I mean? Because Scott Hastings and who was the other centre? Probably you should know, he played the test matches.
They both... Scott Gibbs was brought on instead of Will, wasn't he?
Scott Gibbs, of course. Scott Gibbs, yeah. Scott Gibbs and Scotty Hastings were the two, you know. And Will Carling was he wasn't even on the sub, so he's completely out of it. You know what I mean? So
he's completely out of it.
That in itself was a talking point, because he would have been favoured to captain the Lions. I'd imagine the fact that Ireland beat him on the Saturday before the it was picked probably didn't help his cause either, but sure, that's the way it goes.
So in 05, they didn't room together. Shane Byrne was talking about that on the show a few weeks ago, and you didn't have that bonding. Because you were on Wednesday, Mick, and you were on Saturday, Nick Popplewell, did you guys room together? Did you see each other much? Because you're like the only Irish lads on tour. I know a couple of lads got called up, but what was the bonding like, as it were?
Well, Mick, it was great having the likes of Mick there, because if I needed studs changed or boots cleaned, you know, there was somebody there I could throw the boots at. I think the big thing is, once the Wednesday and Saturday divide starts, say Mick was playing on a Wednesday, Grant, like us all, you went for a few scoops on a Wednesday evening. You didn't really have training on a Thursday, where the Saturday side started training then on a Thursday, as you know, that would have been the major training session before match days. So it nearly forced itself into a split, and you know, because anyone that played on Wednesday, by and large, they wouldn't really have trained with us on the Thursday, or if they did, they would have been hung over or whatever.
Nick,
and plus,
go on, Mick. Yeah,
You were just talking about roaming. A forward never roamed with a forward. A forward always roamed with a back. And like, and that was one of the amazing things about the whole tour. You actually got to roam with every other member of every back on the squad. I remember roaming with them. You know what I mean? And it was, that in itself was quite funny. You know what I mean? But you never, they put the forwards with the backs, and obviously the backs with the forwards. So the forwards actually never roamed together. So which was just a plan that I suppose it was just a. It was set in stone before they ever went there. And it was good because you certainly got to know, you know, how would you get to know a person better? You either go for a mind room or you're in the same room with them. You know what I mean? So, you know, from that point of view, and for me personally, I think Poppy, you probably say the same thing. I get on with every whole one of them. I really enjoyed their company. And people often say, what are the English like? So they were the best crack of all. You know what I mean? They really were. Why, they were sound. Absolutely. They were solid.
Yeah. Unbelievable, you know, and the best tourists by far, and the Welsh. No, the by English far. And Welsh, yeah. Scotland's a bit.
The Welsh get a bit homesick after a while, but apart from that, they were fine, you know.
So but Nick, there again, I remember going out, Golov, and I was happy to be on the tour, and you had Jason Leonard there, who, in fairness to Jason, fantastic player, and I like quite rightfully I presumed, well, Jason's number one, I'm number two, loose head. And I didn't talk to Jason until, I would say, the second test. So I didn't talk to him in training. I had no interest in any, you know, fraternization. At Grand, we went in the day shooting, and I suppose I probably joked, Jesus, give me Jason there and I'll shoot him instead of the feckin' pigeon. you know, it's gas how, I suppose, competitive you get out of maybe on a low base. Because, you know, I remember being petrified going over to England, Golov, and we would have talked about this, going over to do the first weekend training session, and you said, shit, you know, here's all these lads, these peers that never stop running. How are we going to keep up with them?
Yeah.
You know, and I was really, really conscious about that. And in fairness, we got over there, and, you know, two arms, two legs, one head, same as, not a bother.
Same as.
Yeah.
Like what you really knew, like what you really felt, I suppose, and even from my point of view, my biggest problem was, and they were trying to understand my Kerry accent, you know what I mean? But we eventually got through that as well. But straight away, Poppy, what you did notice is the intensity and the training just picked up and picked up and picked up, you know what I mean? And as you said, yeah, and like you were lucky enough to have got on the test side, but look, you had to be fairly brutal about it as well. And you know, it's interesting that you say that, because Jason Leonard is one of the nicest lads you'll ever meet. You know what I mean? And I kind of forgotten that. There was obviously competition there between yourself and himself, but you obviously won the competition. That's what it takes.
So we're recapping on the Lions here, 1993 New Zealand with Nick Popplewell and Mick Galway. 5-3-1-0-6, if you want to ask that as a question between now and 3 o'clock. Remember, we've got commentary of the Stormers game coming up at 5. On what Mick is saying there, Nick Popplewell, you're playing with the creme de la creme, so it really is just a case of you concentrating on your own game when you're ready to face the likes of Sean Fitzpatrick in the front row.
Yeah, and obviously it would have been great to have Mick there, in fairness, because a familiar voice. But it was me and the English, basically, and the English pack, and Jason came on, and he, in fairness to Jason, you know, how good is he? He basically came on, he switched over to tight head, you know, so to be able to play international rugby at loose and tight is something I tried and failed miserably, not internationally wise, but club wise. But no, it's just, I mean, Golov would say the same. I'm not trying to say we were certainly no better than anyone else. But I think when you played for Ireland in our era, and they're so fantastic now, and they were probably, as soon as I retired, they seemed to pick up. And they've hardly looked back since, so maybe that in itself, there's some kind of a connection there. But I always kind of felt that you were always trying to do your own job, scrummage, line out, ruck maul, but you also were then trying to cover for somebody else because you just didn't have that 100% confidence that, say, the inside or the outside centre was going to make the tackle. So you were trying just really trying to cover, where certainly you got out to a situation where literally all I had to do was concentrate on my core duties, and then if I happened to do something else extra, well, that was a huge bonus, you know, and it wasn't expected as such. But no, it was, to me, I suppose it probably fed the thought that really I wanted to finish off playing on probably with better sides. That sounds desperate. But I mean, I think I came home after Lions. I played with Greystones for a year, and then I went over to Wasps to play with Wasps. And then I think I finished my career with Newcastle. The Wasps side at the time was a very good side. And then, you know, Newcastle then was when the game went professional. And they were just handpicked, and they were, you know, we were a very, very good club side.
When you faced the Hacker, was it intimidating that first time?
When I faced the Hacker, well, the first time I've had the fantastic, I suppose, badge of having played the New Zealand. I've played the Kiwis 10 times or 11 times, and I've won once. So I'm sick and tired of looking at the bloody Hacker. But I remember the first time I did it was my first cap, and I think I lasted, God will probably correct me here, I think I lasted 8 minutes or 17 minutes because I cracked ribs, but I was actually holding hands or joining hands at Willie Anderson when we actually walked up.
That's right.
And literally fronted up to the Hacker. Now, at the time, I was probably too busy trying to think of the line-out calls and worry about what the bloody lads are doing in front of me. But they used to always say, lads, if anyone is any way conscious about the Hacker or intimidated, look at the little white chap, or not the little white chap, the big white chap at the very back, because he was normally the person that hadn't a clue what was going on, and he was totally out of sync. He was probably a bit like me on the dance floor, and it was actually quite comical, but I think they've probably improved since then.
So, Mick, was there much intimidation around the midweek games?
Well, see, there was, because, again, they wanted to have the Lions scalp, you know what I mean? But I do remember playing, Canterbury is the one game that stood out for me. And I remember, because we had played, Ireland had played them the previous year, and they knocked seven kinds out of us. You know what I mean? They really knocked seven kinds out of us. And it was kind of one of those games, I remember, it was a defining game from the Irish tour, because they bullied us, they intimidated us, they were dirty shots and the whole lot. I remember the same thing was happening in this game. And it's probably my favourite game of the whole tour. I actually scored a try in it. But I remember straight away, we weren't going to get bullied. We weren't going to get intimidated. And it was just great to be part of a team that went back to beat Canterbury. Because Canterbury were always the side they were going to, I think, of history will have said, told that Canterbury were going to be the team that softened up the Lions. That's the way they were. You know what I mean? So I remember being involved in that game. And yes, it was dirty. It was, but like we, let's put it this way, we gave better than what we got this time, and we came out winning. And that was a great game from my point of view. Looking back at it, just to beat Canterbury alone was fantastic. And but that was earlier on. And then, of course, you know, as we said, unfortunately, like, it went from that to the White Cattle game, where fellas had thrown in the towel after 5 minutes. And that was a bad place to be honest, because nobody wants to be in a team that gets a hiding. But sometimes, you know, when there were some fellas already on the plane, like, and that was the disappointing thing about it. But from my point of view, I didn't throw in the towel. But look, you know, when Nick will tell you, or anybody will tell you who plays rugby, and particularly a physical sport, unless everybody's involved and if everybody is committed, you're not going to come up the right side. And we certainly didn't come up the right side of that one. That was the low point for me. The Canterbury game was probably the high point, you know.
Nick, what was the coaching of Ian McGeoghegan like up close and personal? We saw the Living with Lions in 1997 when they beat South Africa, but did you see the genesis of that and what you would have experienced in the dressing room in 93?
Yeah, I think it was the sheer respect everyone had for him. So every time he spoke, you listened to him, and your perception was, and quite rightfully, you know, what he spoke was right. But he'd get you, you know, it's when you were walking down the corridor and you might bump into him and he just literally touch him in the arm and say, listen, you know, well done, or, you know, just a little bit of work on that. You know, he was just able to manage very, very well. And, you know, I suppose I was really, really fortunate for whatever reason. I started on, and I hate saying, there is a big divide though, Golov. You know, Saturday and Wednesday, at the end of the day, you know, it's two different teams, and I think if you can start on the Saturday and not mess up, it's easy peasy. It's quite hard to go from the Wednesday to the Saturday, because you're relying on two factors. A, your mate who's taking your place on the Saturday side to play bad or get injured or something, and you to play extremely well on the Wednesday. And as Mick says, you know, if the Wednesday side is all in it and they're playing well, like the game against Canterbury, happy days. But then if you're facing, you know, like a match, I remember lads like Mick being totally dejected against Waikato. Why? Because basically the chances of getting on the Saturday side for the test or whatever, you know, was just gone. And that was I think that's the very disappointing thing about it, you know.
When it came to the tests, when you look back, was the series you should have won? You won the second test, you lost the first one narrowly, Nick. The third one,
we
you got blown away.
The first one, yeah. In fairness. Who was it? Was it an Australian referee for the first one, Golov?
It was, yeah.
Yeah, what was his name? Yeah, but put it this way, you wouldn't invite him to play poker with you anyway. Basically, there was a situation where.
It was
a winter bottle.
Very controversial penalty. Yeah. In the first test, remember, Dean Richards gave it away, and it wasn't a penalty at all. It was a rob at a break. Yeah.
And then Grant they Fox got three points, and that was the end, the whistle blown. So, and
if Grant Fox kicked the winning, yeah.
On a Lions tour, you know, test, I think history will prevail. If you don't win the first test, you don't win the series. The first test, you have to win. And great, we had a fantastic match in Wellington, the second test. Even though I think Gavin Hastings, the captain, I think he dropped a ball under the post in the first couple of minutes, high ball, and they scored a try. But I think the total fear of losing the second test kind of drove us on, and we had a fantastic win down there. And then, as far as I remember, I think the third test, we got hoped off the park, Olive.
Was it a greater experience in terms of the actual quality of the players you were up against than you'd ever experienced, Nick? I know you said you played against New Zealand many times, but was that their peak, that Lions team?
As in the Lions players?
Yeah, the New Zealand opposition, when you're down there, you're away from home, is this like ultimately the pinnacle? Do you feel it in the game?
I think New Zealand in New Zealand is the toughest side in the world, and I'd probably be stand corrected, but you know, you're playing against New Zealand, you're playing against every schoolboy, every woman. Like, the women are more into rugby than the lads. So no matter where you are, it's rugby, rugby, rugby. And just the sheer intensity all around. There's no let up. I mean, it's just everything is rugby. You know, over here, Grand, you've Gaelic, you've whatever, soccer. But it's just rugby, 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 rugby. And it's relentless. And you're kind of going from... You're playing your match, say, on a Wednesday, and then you're flying out the next day or the day after to another place. So then, you know, you have a different crowd, but you're starting off the same intensity again. So every 3 days, you're just meeting this. And no, it's great. It's great if it's going well, but it is tiring after a while.
When you were playing with Warren Gatland, Mick, would you have expected now that it'd be on a third Lions tour as a coach?
Well, I think that's probably an easy decision. You know, he's done it before. You know, they're comfortable with him doing it. You know, he has the experience. I think there wasn't a lot of other lads putting their hand up. Am I wrong on that one? Or did a few lads back down from it?
Mick Galway, would you have expected it now that it'd be three on a third tour as a Lions coach, Mick? Warren Gatland?
I wouldn't have expected it because I wouldn't, to be honest, because I played against him. I remember even playing against him when he was playing with Galwegians. And... now what I did, and I had him as a coach when he first came to Ireland, and in fact, like, he was good to me because he brought me back out of the wilderness and gave me captaincy of Ireland. So, you know, I personally, I wouldn't have any issues with him. But what I always saw Warren Gatland's strength is that he surrounded himself with good people. You know what I mean? Like, tactically, as a coach, he might have been the best. He was good probably in the front row and the scrummaging and that, but he certainly wasn't afraid to share the workload, and I think that is his strength. He, you know, he gets people around him that he trusts, obviously, and that he, not, I won't say controls, because, you know, I'd imagine that you know he's open to suggestions, but he's been very clever in what he's done. And to answer your question, at the start, you know, if somebody said to me that he was going to be tour manager for head coach for Three Lions Tours, not a hope, but would I have thought about it. But at the same time, you look at his track record, you see what he has done, firstly with Wasps, then with Wales, and obviously now with the Lions. His record speaks for itself. The one thing I would be worried about is his loyalty to a lot of players, and particularly the Welsh lads. And that is my one worry, that maybe the best side mightn't go out next Saturday, because of Warren Gatland's loyalty, and this will be a big test for him, because there's a lot of players that he's probably close to. He's going to have to be more.
Okay, just the line is a little bit bad there, Mick. We'll just ask Nick Popplewell. Like, should Johnny Sexton be out there in your view, Nick?
No, 100% not. I think, but there again, as Golov is saying, you know, you see Alwyn flying out there after an injury. You have to be bulletproof, really, hitting the ground there. And we saw, certainly I watched the match last week, and the severity of it, or the, you know, it's just attritional out there. And if Johnny was out there, he'd be a target. And, you cannot carry injuries to a Lions tournament. You just cannot carry. You just don't have the time for lads to get fit and to be able to adjust to get new players in. I think, you know, Johnny is just too fragile at the moment. You know, not a nice thing to say. What would I know being a prop? But that would be my perception.
Just before we take a break, so when you're looking back, whatever, nearly 30 years later, and Nick Popplewell, was it an absolute blast? Did you have a good balance between brilliant rugby and good fun when you consider your tenure as a Lion? Was it the highlight of your career?
Oh, absolutely. It was absolutely fantastic. And it was, you know, Golov was lucky to last a few years longer than me, where he played with successful Irish sides. But I really, you know, unfortunately, the 10 years I was involved with Irish rugby was a tough 10 years, and we'd very, very little consistency. This allowed me really to play with, I suppose, players that were, I'm not going to say they were my idol as such, but they were certainly, you went out there and there was no real weaknesses on a team. And as I said before, you can just literally concentrate on your own job. And, you know, it was a pleasure to play. And, you know, you went out to every match believing you would win. In Ireland, you went out with every match hoping you would win, you know. So, you know, that was the difference.
Mick Galway, when you came back to Ireland after that, were your eyes a bit more open?
Yeah, they certainly were. I would definitely say I came back a better player, more experienced, more wiser. You know, what I liked most about the tour is obviously I was nowhere near the test side, but I learned a lot. You know what I mean? There's no doubt about it. I came back a better player, and certainly my eyes were opened. Where if we wanted to be successful as an Irish team, we had a lot more work to do. You know what I mean? And funny enough, in the next few years, the game will be professional anyway. But certainly looking at the English, particularly the English guys, they were just years ahead of us. You know what I mean? Like, I think when I went out there that time, it was my first time really seriously doing weights. You know what I mean? And I remember doing weights with Mike Teague, who was like, you know what I mean? He was like a bodybuilder. And I remember doing weights on one day, and like he was telling me, like, just ease off. You know what I mean? Because I was only going to hurt myself. You know what I mean? And I said, like, but look at you. He says, yeah, but I've been doing this for 10 years. He says, you know what I mean? So that's how far ahead they were now. Thankfully, the whole cycle has changed, and it did change shortly after that. But just even their physicality, the English physicality, was something that I certainly felt that, look, and I know we beat them actually the following year in Twickenham, but, you know, that was the trouble playing with Ireland at the time. Yeah, you'd always be you'd be up there for the one match, but Nick and myself were never lucky enough to be involved in a Triple Crown winning side or a Grand Slam winning side, and that's what it's all about. We didn't just have the consistency. We had the once off, yes, but not the consistency, and that's what I realised on that tour.
Okay, got to take a break. Mick Galway, Nick Popplewell, thanks so much for now. Listeners, if you want to text a question to the lads on that Lions tour or this Lions tour, 53106 is the number. Remember, our coverage of the 2021 British and Irish Lions tour on OTB Sports, brought to you with Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions. Just give you an update on Clare and Wexford. Clare 116, Wexford 113. So Wexford fighting back at Semple Stadium. It is Laois 11 points, Waterford 113 at Nolan Park. These in the hurling qualifiers. Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk is back after this.
Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through till 8 o'clock. You can text us 53106, tweet us at Off the Ball. It's getting closer and turnless between Clare and Wexford in the hurling. James Cahill.
Yeah, John, it's Clare 119, Wexford 115, 30 minutes gone in the second half. It's a much closer affair here now. Wexford are up are scoring 5 points here in the second half, so Fair Clare 4. It's a much tighter affair. Jim O'Keefe scored a goal in the 23rd minute, and then Wexford followed up with 6 points, 5 on the trot, and they went in 5 points down at half time. Clare couldn't get into the dressing room quick enough. For the first 2 minutes in the second half, Wexford started as they finished the first and scored three in a row, but Clare got with another point here now. That's a great score, David Reeve, another point. So now it's Clare 120, Wexford 115. Much closer game here. I say we're going to be in for a good finish.
Okay, James Scahill there, keeping an eye on Clare and Wexford in the hurling qualifiers. The other score in the hurling qualifiers, it is Laois 11 points, Waterford 116. So an 8-point lead at half time for the Daisha at Nolan Park. We have got Nick Popplewell and Mick Galway, Irish rugby legends, on the line. Looking back on Lions Pass, going to have a look ahead as well to the test series here. You can listen on News Talk, watch us on the digital and social channels as well for Off the Ball. 53106 for text messages. Ask Nick Popplewell, was his worst moment losing to Terranure in the Guilfoyle Cup?
Oh, good God. I've never beat Terranure. I never beat Mary's. Never beat Old Wesley. So, probably not. In fairness, I mean, we had a good Greystone side, Gollop, didn't we?
Yeah, had a very good side. Johnny Murphy, Brian Rigney, you know what I mean? God, you the serious side.
Yeah, so we had Spud Murphy, you had Wardy,
Spud Murphy, yeah.
Paul McNaughton. Big side. Clive Woolham. Better mention Clive.
We also got one in here. Ask Mick and Nick, where did they go the night before the England match in 1993? Mick Galway, did you go out or did you go to bed early?
We went out for one. I remember very well.
Did I go down for the one with you, or did I have one with you and went down for another one? I can't remember that.
Maybe, yeah.
I remember the forwards
more or less all went together from what I remember, but yeah, we definitely had one. It was kind of tradition.
You had to buy a round each mix, so that would have made it quite a kind of eight.
And the subs. That'd make
the subs. No, we never had that many. I remember the year after when you played the year afterwards, obviously, Mick, didn't you? Sorry, I'm not going to be silly here. Yeah. So was it yourself, myself, Claw, and Terry Kingston went down for one? Was that it?
That was it.
And
you're
dead
right.
We went. That was four. Yeah, four. So we were in the bar or we were in the lounge, and I looked up, or you looked up, probably me, I'd say, looked up, and all the selectors were in the bar looking in at us.
I remember that.
And
I
said, lads, don't look up. And with that, everyone looked up. And I think at that stage we had 3 pints, and it wouldn't have been, probably Terry now in fairness was quite sensible. I think Terry said, right lads, we're off, and you stood up. Sorry, I have to watch my language because I got a complaint on that, so I apologize in advance. So you basically said, there's no way we're going, it's Claw's round. So we finished the fourth one, so we went back to the hotel, up to bed. Nothing was said. We beat England the next day, and nothing was ever said.
Yeah.
So, different times.
I think we beat them out of fear, Poppy. You know what I mean? That was the thing, because if England had beaten us, it was going to be our fault.
Curtains, yeah. But saying that, I remember going to a French match on the long bus journey. I think we were normally about 2 hours out. No, we weren't. We had a long bus journey anyway, and we passed a restaurant. And the French side were outside drinking wine, eating and smoking.
Different times, lads.
They beat the socks off us.
Different times.
In Paris, yeah.
So we got a test next Saturday live here in News Talk. Mick Galway, who do you want to see in that Lions team? Who should be in the Lions team against South Africa in your view?
Oh, in my view, well, I tell you, what's really going to throw things up in the air here is Alwyn Jones. He's back in today. He has to get a run, and if he's deemed fit, he probably will start. Well, otherwise, you know, it wouldn't. It's kind of throwing things up in the air, because I really feel sorry for Henderson. I thought he did exceptionally well, and unfortunately on Wednesday he played like a fella that kind of, you know, realised that Alwyn Jones was here. From that point of view, it was disappointing. But obviously that there's the likes of Tyke Furlong will be a guarantee. My front row would be Wynn Jones, Jamie George, and Tyke Furlong. Probably second row would be Itoje and Alwyn Jones if he's fit. If not, Henderson should be in there. Courtney Laws will be there, thereabouts. I think the back row is going to be very interesting. I think from my point of view, it's going to be huge, because we saw in the midweek match there, South Africa, what the back row brings. I think Tadhg Burton has done loads, and you need a kind of a player like him. I'm a big fan of Simmons and Tom Curry. I don't think Gatland will leave the likes of let's say all the Welsh forwards out of it. But if I was picking the back row, I'd go for Tadhg Burton, Tom Curry, and Sam Simmons, and that in itself is going to cause debate, I'd imagine.
What would your front eight look like, Nick?
Yeah, interesting. I would have gone Wyn Jones because I think he actually played very well and he scrummaged very well. Yeah, I would have just presumed with the Gatland relationship, Ken Owens was just on the team sheet and maybe Cowan Dickey coming on as a super sub. But I thought Owens was very poor. The decision making when they were, you know, facing 13 men to literally choose a scrum to me was just bonkers. Like I didn't, and I, you know, again, you know, who made those decisions? Was that Murray making the decision, or was it Ken Owens?
I don't think it was Murray, but he should have been strong enough to make those decisions because if you're down to 13 men, you know, if it happened that under 14s, they'd know exactly.
Yeah.
They're down two players. Let's time in a scrum and run the ball. You know what I mean?
And especially because the scrum was doing so well, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They were on top of the scrum. You know what I mean?
Interesting.
Decisions like that will lose them a series. So that's why Ken Owens, I just couldn't understand why he kept doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it just
didn't. But then again, maybe Conor Murray being captain, that was his opportunity to put his stamp on it, you know what I mean? But, you know, and maybe that was Conor Murray's first time captaining, and then maybe in the back of his head, he knew Alvin Jones was back anyway. So, you know, there was
Alvin Jones coming back. Yeah, I mean, the thing about bringing Alvin back is, Jesus Christ, it's a huge disruption. It really is. It's a mental
disruption.
You know, and it's really...
Absolutely.
Where does that come out of? I mean, where do you stop?
Absolutely.
You know, as good as he is. Now, I would have said Wyn Jones, Ken Owens, really, because I can't see him not being picked. With Cowan Dickey coming
in. Yeah.
Furlong, Grant, Atoje, you know, Atoje is what he is. I don't particularly like him, but he's a great player and he'll always give away a few penalties. You know, the way he plays, he gives away penalties, but he gives you a little bit of an edge. You know, if Wyn Jones is there, you know, he's going to be picked. And again, as you quite rightly said, I mean, I thought Henderson had been playing really well. He had kind of taken over the line out. Duties of commanding them and basically shaping them, and he was poor last time out and he did look distracted, and maybe that's because he's been told basically good luck. Courtney Laws, I think, will start six. Why? Because physicality, full stop. I think Tom Curry is playing so well, he cannot be you know, you can't leave him out. And again, you know, I kind of said Faletau, but Simmons is so bloody good. But
And your backs, Mick Galway? Okay, we got an issue with Mick's line there. Nick Popplewell, who would you pick in your back line?
Yeah, I prefer Mick goes first and I can criticise him afterwards. obviously, I think Murray, hopefully bigger if he's obviously fit. It's going to be hard. I mean, Farrell looks out of sorts. Russell's got a knock. So, you know, if bigger's in trouble... You know, Farrell at 10, Jesus, you know, that's not going to, that wouldn't give me huge confidence. I don't think he's playing well at all. 11, probably Van der Merwe. Yeah, defensively, maybe a little, you know, not, there's a few little issues there, but he's just so strong going forward. 12 and 13, you know. Henshaw, hopefully. Is he back fit? I think he is. Maybe Chris Harris of Scotland. I know there's talk of Elliot Daly coming in because he can kind of bring in a kicking option. Josh Adams and you know, probably Hogg and Lee Williams will probably feel gutted not to be picked. But maybe, you know, Gatlin will put Lee Williams in there, you know.
Mick Galway, I think you might have you back there. Who would your back line be?
I'd definitely go for Conor Murray. Out half is an issue. It'll be very interesting to see how Marcus Smith goes today. But Dan Biggar, I believe, is injured. You know, and there's, you know, there's a bit of an issue there with out half. You know, certainly I suppose Dan Biggar is the player that has been playing well. in the centres, I hope Robbie Hijab comes through today. I really hope he does, because he was the form player coming into it, and particularly the Japan match, I thought he was phenomenal. And I had Bundyaki with him. You know, people might say I have my Irish flag on here, but certainly Bundyaki, Robbie Hijab, the way they play it as a unit is phenomenal. Back three is going to be interesting. Stuart Hogg, for me, is the best fullback. Josh Adams is the man that's scoring all over the place. And on the other wing, I'm torn between Anthony Watson and Van der Merwe. Probably Watson, because he has the experience and you know. But from that point of view, I think it's going to be very interesting, the back line.
Are we going to win the series, McGalway? Are we going to win the series?
I think we will. I think we will if we pick the right team. I definitely think we will. I think if Warren Gatland is picks the right team, I think we can. If Warren Gatland sticks to all the Welsh lads that he usually does with, we could be in trouble.
Nick Popplewell, do you see the Springboks' physicality being quietened by this Lions 15? Do you think the Lions have enough to win the series?
I think they do, definitely. And you're kind of, you know, as I said, watching them last time out, you were kind of saying, you know, you're not going to show everything up front, but just, I think I was surprised at some of the basic errors that were being made and some of the poor decisions. Alwyn Jones, Mick, I mean, is he just going to be shooed in now if he gets through 20 or 30 minutes today? Is that just a given, is it?
Yeah, we're running out of time. Nick Popplewell, do you think they're going to go through the three series?
Yeah, I'm going to back the Lions, absolutely.
Okay, well, Nick Popplewell, Mick Galway, you're so generous to give us your time. Thanks so much for reminiscing on the 1993 tour. Enjoy the next 3 weeks, and we'll speak soon. Thanks again.
Thanks a million.
Thank you, John. See you, Poppy.
Nick Popplewell, Mick Galway there, speaking on the Saturday panel this week. Remember, more build-up from the Lions. Sean Cronin and James Downey after 4, then commentary of the Stormers game. Neil Tracy and James bringing you right through till 7, and then a recap after 7 on that. We're going to be back after the news, checking in with James Cahill on that hurling qualifier between Clare and Wexford. Also previewing the Leinster hurling final involving Kilkenny and Dublin, getting Paddy Talley's thoughts as well out of the Ulster football semi-final between Armagh and Monaghan. This is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Just to let you know, it is Clare 1-23, Wexford 117, 123-117. We're back after the news.
Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, lead partner of the British and Irish Lions.